hunting, hunting. Rack city chick, rack rack city chick, 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 10, 10, 10, 20s and a 50s chick, rack city chick, rack rack city chick, rack city chick, rack rack city chick, rack city chick, rack rack city chick, 10, 10, 10, 20s and a 50s chick. City chick, rack rack city chick. Rack city chick, rack rack city chick.
You are listening to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu and 102.3 FM here locally in San Rafael. This is Hot in the Igloo. I am Ethan Estrada, and for the first time, join us here on Hot in the Igloo. I'll throw it over to Ken Goldstone, who will be hosting the soccer segment for today.
All right, let's start right off with the Lady Penguins coming off a superb weekend. Two wins led by Lily Dubuck led the charge there for them. And so far in the conference, they're looking 3-1 in the Pac West. Going further, overall this season, they're 4-4-1, so a really nice improvement from their preseason. It's really nice to see them building even more. Also in conference, the Lady Penguins have outscored their opponents 11-3. That's outstanding. I mean, that's incredible. That goal difference is something that they definitely can look forward to continuing. So, furthermore, Lily Dubuck has been claimed and listed as NC2A D2 Pac West Player of the Week. And that's honestly not a surprise. The Penguins this weekend scored a total of 8 goals across 2 games, and Lily was involved in 4 of the 8, so quite a well-deserved honor there. Even more, looking at some superb play, was Alyssa Ramos, had 15 saves this weekend. That is something that is a little worrisome about the defense, having that many shots go off. However, Alyssa Ramos stepped up and kept her team in these games with a shutout and a few goals in one of the games. Not bad, though, for a weekend of soccer for a goalkeeper. Furthermore, Bailey Kaiser picked up a goal, her first of the season. Yasmin Angel also on the board with her first. Michelle Lee picks up her 4th goal of the season. Cassidy Marquez also picks up a goal against HNU. So that performance there was incredible for them. I believe it was 5 goals for them that day. And more or less, they took that performance and continued in for the next game. Dominican outshot their opponents 24-8 against Holy Names. Quite the performance on their part, as well as a good defensive performance. Only 8 shots let on target, or shots in general. Those aren't even listed as on target here. So good improvement by them compared to what we've seen lately on Kennelly Field. So let's hope they bring that into this weekend here.
And the only game that I was on the mic for the women's game so far was against Chico State. And that was not a very good performance. A lot of losing control of the ball in the middle of the field. How do you think the women have improved since that home loss?
You know, overall, the games I've seen here at Kennelly Field, I haven't had the opportunity to travel with the team. However, the improvements at home I've seen is better defensive organization. Head coach brings in They play Daggy out wide right now, and they brought in, it was Lexi Martinez. They brought in Lexi Martinez in the center defensive position next to Kakawa. That right there brought in a lot of life into the defense. It brought up pace of play with ball movement in the back. It allowed them to swing the ball left to right easily, as well as right to left, sending Dubuck down the line quite frequently. That long ball there was more in sync, and that was, I think, what they were doing better, was the defense was more organized.
And Alyssa Ramos, she, ever since she gave up those 3 goals to Chico State, she has been phenomenal. There was a point where Dominican had a very long clean sheet for, what was it, 2.5 games?
I believe it totaled 3 games and into a smidge of the 4th. But other than, I mean, Alyssa Ramos, still that long without any goals allowed is incredible for any goalkeeper at this level of play. 2A is competitive from what we've seen so far across the Pac West this year. But it feels like the teams might even be a little bit more balanced from the Chico game. I know you didn't see much, Ethan, on the Penguins side, but since that game, their competition has been good. It's put them on the back foot. They've had to defend, but they've also had to keep their organization. And that's really been what's building up that confidence they've had. And with Dubuk, she's chasing that school goal record. I mean, that's huge as well. She just got Pac West. She's coming into another couple games this weekend, a game on Friday and a game Sunday. Those games should be good for her. She's looking to pick up a few more goals. However, she might be a little bit more inclined to get a few more assists with where she is out wide. I mean, from a wide player's perspective, goals aren't necessarily the primary focus. It's getting those assists in. However, she's been really effective getting that ball into Michelle Lee, which we really can't criticize at all.
And for those of, and Ken, for those listeners who are at home who don't know what the school record for goals is for women's, what, how far off is Dubuk?
Dubuk currently is, at this point, 8 goals back, which is impressive considering she spent her whole sophomore season injured. Most her junior season was in recovery. So she had her freshman year and now her senior year to really attempt to hit this record. And with her remaining games, I really feel like she has the ability to continue with that pace she's on and eventually get past that record.
She has definitely been one of the most standout players in the one in the couple games that I've seen. I've only been on the mic for one of them, but I've enjoyed watching a lot of Dominican soccer. And now we're going to transition to the men, who are 3-4-2 overall and 0-1-1 in the Pac West. And the last time they were here at Kennelly Field, it was a heartbreaking tie. You have a 2-0 lead with 15 minutes left, and all of a sudden the lead evaporates and you end in a draw.
Yeah, that was, I believe when I was on the mic with Soren, who's unfortunately not here with us today, I remember when they got that second goal, I went, okay, we have that second goal. However, that's the most dangerous lead to have in soccer. It really is where it comes down to the fact that the team that you're up against is down by 2 goals. They score one goal, they're back in it. They scored that second goal. Now you're tied. You've lost your momentum, and that team is now pushing to pick up that next goal at a better rate than you're mentally able to compete to try and get your third goal after conceding the two. It's often the most commonly blown lead in professional soccer is that 2-0 lead.
And one thing that I feel is missing from the men's game thus far has been their physicality. We saw that very early on in the preseason, but the last couple of games, it really hasn't been the same. They haven't really been going out there and trying to rip the ball away, not just taking advantages of some mistakes here and there. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're not able to finish most of these games. What do you think about that?
You know, I was looking at that, and it from what initially they were playing this really physical, upbeat game, and that was really noticeable with especially that 8-0 win against Pacific Union. They were very physical against that smaller team there, size-wise. But then the physicality seemed to have dropped after they lost 3-0 to SF State. And I feel like that physicality might have dropped off a little bit after that game and during that game was because SF State was equally, if not more, physical. And that's what really was the game for SF State. 3-0, a win for SF State. Unfortunate for the Penguins, considering the overall performance was good, other than a few lapses in concentration allowing SF State to snag their goals. And then looking at them, it's Concordia as well. They blew that 2-goal lead.
They were able to come back and tie the game at 2.
Yeah, so they came back, which was a different performance there.
And I honestly do believe that Concordia was the least physical game that they played all season. There was no physicality under any circumstance. Chaminade Oregon found a way to eliminate the main physical presence in the Dominican lineup, which is Colin Gumby in the midfield. He sets the tone, and they took him completely out. And once you take away that physical presence, I think Dominican's men's team is a completely different team with Colin Gumby not at the top of his game.
Yeah, and I mean, even though he got pulled apart in the middle of the field there by the offense of the Chaminade, I mean Concordia, was the fact that he was able to... He lost the ball in the center when they put the two center mids right up on him, causing him to be in a 2v1 situation the whole game. And that was really where he lost his physicality, because he had not one but two people marking him, and that was a really troublesome for him, because he's the only holding midfielder with the Penguins formation. In that 4-3-3, they play point back, meaning one center defensive midfielder and two attacking midfielders. So he's solo there in that holding spot, which takes a lot of effort on his own.
Well, then the Dominican men continued on to PacWest play with two games on the road, lost to Holy Names 2-0 and Fresno Pacific 4-2. Now they have gone four straight matches without a win. The first two were ties. One they were able to come back. The other one they blew the lead. Then they go on the road and they only score two goals in two games and surrender six. And I think that says one thing about one of the problems with the Dominican Penguins. I don't want to put anyone on blast, but goal play for the men has not been as strong as, say, Alyssa Ramos in the goal for the women.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that a weaker link for the Penguins at this time is they're figuring out their goalkeeper. They have two good choices, Finney and Raygoza. So they both are good goalkeepers. Don't get that wrong. They're just both trying to figure out when they want to press up and come out to block a shot, or if they want to stay on their line. They're both kind of in this twilight zone, I want to call it, where they're just not quite in sync as well as they could be, but it's there. They still have it as an option. I also feel that with a coaching change I've noticed was that they're playing a lot better with swinging the ball in the back. However, all it takes with that, with how wide the center backs go to get those really long, great passes, is all it takes is one bad pass and the opposing team's in on goal.
And we've seen that quite a bit of times, especially with Finney in the goal. I mean, Finney has made some fantastic saves and has kept Dominican in a lot of games. The only times that he eventually cracks is when the pressure of the offense is just too much, where he can't handle it all by himself. But other than that, the goal situation, I think it'll figure itself out in due time. It hasn't been terrible, but it hasn't been as good as the men would have hoped.
You know, I really feel that another way maybe the Penguins can get back on their early goal scoring form is they seem to have a tactic of their play is to have dropped Will Briggs farther back into more of a center forward role than a traditional striker role. So he's coming back, dropping in more, trying to receive the ball deeper in his own half to start building up play. I completely understand what they're trying to do here. I just don't think it's working well for them. He seems to be at his best when he can use his speed and run at a slower defender. And that's where his bread and butter's been, is his speed. Him dropping in and then having to turn and get around another 6-7 defenders who have dropped back in that time is maybe costing them a few goals, maybe leaving him up top and trying to feed him those through balls for him to run onto, which is his strength lately, might be a good idea.
Well, they take on Chaminade tomorrow at noon. We will have the call for that game. What do you think they need to do in order to get off this little schneid that they're on? They're 0-2-2 coming into this home game. What do you think is the biggest factor for them to come out with the victory?
So they're going up against Chaminade, who has had an okay season so far. They have 3 wins and 2 losses out of their 5 games played. That's a good showing. However, the teams they've been playing haven't been the strongest competition we've seen in the PacWest in recent years. For example, they had to go up against Hilo Hawaii, and it took them into overtime to win 1-0. Hilo finished dead last year in the PacWest with only 6 points, behind our very own Penguins on 6 points due to goal differential. So I feel that our Penguins have a home game against definitely a weaker opponent, and this could be their turning point in their season they needed to regear and get re-energized.
Do you think this could be the game where they regain their physicality?
You know, with seeing the play and the scoreline of Chaminade, I don't blame them. I really hope they go gung-ho. Physicality, a couple yellow cards would be really nice to see for good, hard, clean tackles, where it's just a physical play in the middle of the field, nothing malicious, would be great. However, yellows are part of the game. Reds are also as well part of the game. But if it takes a yellow card to uplift the physicality, I'm all for it.
Well, thank you, Ken. That does our soccer segment for today. We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll have Dominican women's volleyball and a couple of professional sports. You are listening to Hot the Igloo on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, and 102.3 FM.
Settle down with me, and I'll be your safety. You'll be my lady. I was made to keep your body warm, but I'm cold as the wind blows. So hold me in your arms. Oh no, my heart's against your chest. Your lips pressed to my neck, and I'm falling for your eyes, but they don't know me yet. And with this feeling I'll forget, I'm in love now. Kiss me like you wanna be loved. You wanna be loved. You wanna be loved. This feels like
everybody, welcome back to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Ethan Estrada and Ken Goldson just had your DU soccer segment for us on here with Paul Gunnis. We're going to talk a little bit about DU volleyball. 4-9 record overall, 2-6 in the PacWest. Paul, you and I were on the call for the volleyball games last week. Point Loma on Friday, Azusa Pacific on Saturday. It was not a good weekend for the Penguins, considering volleyball, and they won just one set out of those two matches.
Definitely, Forrest. You know, I think that the Point Loma game started us off really hot. You know, we had a good start to the game. We played well. We looked like a great program. I mean, we stomped them in that first set. It wasn't even close. And for a second, everybody in the entire Conlin Center thought maybe this Penguins team could pull this upset off. You know, we were taking on, I believe it was the fourth team in the conference, followed by the number one team in the conference. So, I mean, it was definitely a tall task that the Penguins were up against. But after watching that first set, I mean, I looked at you and I looked at Stu and I said, I think we might have a chance. And it sort of seemed like it got in the girls' heads maybe a little bit, like, hey, maybe we, instead of saying like, maybe we can do this, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe we just won this game. And I think that that hurt us. I think that they didn't have as much belief in themselves as Coach Nolan did, as we did, as anybody else in that arena did. And it was very evident in those later sets. Now, that's not to discredit Point Loma for making adjustments, but I think that we weren't as outmatched as it looked like we were in those sets 2 through 4 in that Point Loma game.
You talked about that first set, 25-16. That was the final score, set number one, which the Penguins dominated, like you said. And then it was flipped around back on the Penguins. They lost 25-16 and then lost another one 25-15. And then 25-19, that fourth set, they made a little bit of a run. But like you said, they kind of looked shocked that they won that set number one. And you hear a lot of coaches say, act like you've been there before. And, you know, coming into that game, we were 4-7 overall going into that game. Like you said, playing the number four team in the conference, and on paper it doesn't look promising. And then you go out and you dominate like that, and I think it might have been a little shell shock. And then it just wasn't a very solid performance on Saturday either against Azusa Pacific.
Well, I think Azusa Pacific definitely had us outmatched. I mean, they just look like an outstanding program. Not to say our program isn't promising, but that is a different level. They definitely were more elite. Going back to your point, Forrest, about the girls being a little shocked about what we were talking about, talking to Shayna Snyder the other day, she was talking to me. She's a freshman on the volleyball team. She played. We called her name a lot this weekend. She was telling me that they, as a team, collectively, once they were in that position of, like, let's get this done, they definitely missed the leadership of Brittany Lateague. You know, I think when you have a good leader in Lateague, I mean, not to discredit even at all, because she's a great leader as well, but when you're missing one of your captains, one of your top players, they are the people that push you as having such a young roster. You know, we only have three seniors, no juniors, and the rest are sophomore and freshmen. And when you have such a young roster, they haven't been there before, you know, and I think that they needed that extra push, and missing Lateague those two games really hurt them. It hurt them in not getting at least one set in the Azusa Pacific game, which I think would have been great for their confidence, but it really, really hurt them in that Point Loma game, because we all thought that they could win that game. And I think if they would have had some leadership, they would have got it done.
In the leadership that you're talking about, Kate Even was the only Penguin in double digits with kills in that game against Point Loma. She had 12. Catherine Johnson, the sophomore, had 8. And, you know, Point Loma had 3 in double digits. Then you look at that Azusa Pacific game where they came in 8-0. They were unbeaten, outmatched, like you said, first in the Pac West. They were 12-4 overall, unbeaten in the Pac West. And they left the Conlon Center unscathed. I mean, it was a 25-11 set number one, and then a 25-10 set number two. The Penguins hardly got in to double digits in that second set. And then in set number three, it was 25-23, but it just seemed a little too late at that point.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the Penguins, they knew, sort of like everybody else knew, that they were outmatched. And you could just see it in their demeanor, in their body language, in their attitude. And even in, not to discredit Coach Nolan at all, but it just seemed like, from our perspective, the whole bench, everybody was demoralized, kind of knew, like, why are we here? Just give them the win. And when you come in with that attitude, if you don't come in with the attitude of, we're going to upset this team, you're not going to upset the team. There's no miracles that are going to happen in the sporting world. Me and you both know, being athletes growing up, unless you think you can do it, you're not going to do it. Yeah. So that's just, there was no surprise there. As soon as I saw them come out a little bit slow, a little bit lackluster, a little bit like, I can't believe we blew yesterday. Why are we even here? We have no chance against this team if we can't beat the guys from yesterday. It was over.
In which both teams were beatable.
No, definitely.
Anybody's beatable on any given day.
Absolutely. This is sports, yeah. You know? And I think that after watching a team that was very beatable in Point Loma, I thought, watching them lose to that team, they had no chance against that Azusa Pacific team. Because when they played Azusa Pacific, you had to have everything, like, on point. Your walls had to be tight. Everything had to be. Your blocks had to be perfect. And they just didn't seem like their rotations were off. Everything was off. They just didn't care. And I don't mean to discredit our program again, but sometimes you got to be brutally honest. And that's what's going to take for them to wake up and start winning some games here. Because, I mean, the season's not over. Yes, we are, you know, 4-9. But we have a lot of conference play left. We have a lot of games left where we can make something out of this season. I think the girls shouldn't give up. I think the fans shouldn't give up. Get out there, support, you know, the Penguins, and let's get this season back on road, because I think we can do it. I really do.
Kate Even, the only Penguin in double digits against Point Loma, no Penguin in double digits against Azusa Pacific. They go on the road. They're not home for a while. They are at Biola, at Concordia University Irvine, and at Notre Dame Dana Moore before they're back home on October 12th as the Penguins host Fresno Pacific that night. That game is at 7 p.m. That's a Friday night. So like you said, Paul, come out to the Conlon Center. We'll be there. Come over and say hi to us on Media Row. And the Penguins looking to turn it around, 4-9 overall, 2-6 in the Pac West Conference. So that does it for your DU Sports. Ethan Estrada and Ken Goldstone on men's and women's soccer, Paul Gunnis and myself on volleyball. Here, as we move a little further into the show, we're going to go and full steam right into Major League Baseball. As you know, we cover all DU sports, all professional sports, as much as our knowledge lets us here on Hot in the Igloo. at Penguin Radio. Let's talk about the postseason picture, and I'm going to bring in Ethan Estrada for this. You weren't at the volleyball game, so you were a little preoccupied over here. And do we have NLDS game going on right now, the Rockies and the Brewers, and I'm almost certain that game just got a little tighter.
Yes, the score right now is still 2-0 Milwaukee in the top of the ninth, but Colorado, after Gerardo Parra walked a single by Matt Holliday, and now Charlie Blackmon up against Jeremy Jeffress representing the go-ahead run in a 2-1 count up in the great state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, we know that it's Rockies and Brewers right now in the ninth inning, as you said. We got Braves, Dodgers, first pitch any minute. And then starting tomorrow night, the Indians, Astros, ALDS, and Yankees, Red Sox, ALDS. Can we talk about those wild card games? Because one was one of the better playoff games, single games, I've ever seen. And one of them wasn't. And I'm sure you could figure out which was which.
Definitely, Forrest. You know, talking about those two wild card games, I had the pleasure of watching both of them on my laptop sitting at home. And that Cubs game was probably one of the best baseball games I've had to watch probably since the Oakland-Kansas City game a few years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where Oakland just blew the lead, and I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. Yankees fan. But going back to this game, it was incredible. Watching the pitching matchups, watching these starters come in relief for the Cubs and just throw lights out. I mean, throw lights out. No discredit to Hendricks because he kind of blew it. But I think it was such a great matchup. You know, watching the Rockies persevere after not getting a run after the first inning, was it, or the second inning?
After the first.
First inning, yeah. The Rockies scored their first run in the first inning. Didn't score again until the 14th or 13th? 14th. 14th. So I should have more confidence in my memory here, but
13th. It's okay.
Oh, 13th. Sorry.
Yeah.
13th. So anyways, not scoring again until the 13th inning. It was just amazing to watch a team persevere through hitting struggles. It wasn't really hitting struggles. It was just a pitching matchup like I've never seen before. And that's great baseball. Going to the A's, once again, they struggle in...
Breaking
news. Charlie Blackmon has just singled. It is 2-1 Milwaukee, still first and second, and nobody out for the Colorado Rockies. DJ LeMahieu, Nolan Arenado, and Trevor Story coming up.
Well, there it goes. There's the Rockies' perseverance again. Down 2-0 all game, and here they are. So,
and before that game ends and somebody gets an upper hand, I want to go around the room and your picks. I don't care if it's who you like or who you think is the better team, but who are you taking in this NLDS Rockies Brewers?
Series or game?
Series.
Personally, I'm going Rockies. Watching them play that game, that team looks like a team that's going to fight through anything.
Colorado is dangerous, but man, that Brewer bullpen is too good. I know right now it doesn't look so bright with Jeremy Jeffress, but once you get a starting pitcher on the mound, you're not bullpenning, you're not burning all your pieces, Milwaukee, Oakland, you will have a better chance to win, and especially once you get into the high altitude of Colorado, you have two lineups who are so deep and who love to hit. So I think I'm going to take the Milwaukee Brewers for one reason and one reason only. The MVP is batting in their order. Christian Yelich is hitting for the Milwaukee Brewers, and that's why I will take the Brewers in the series in five. I'm calling it in five.
And Yelich has the only RBIs in this game so far for Milwaukee. I'm gonna Mile High City. I'm gonna take the Mile High. I'm gonna go Colorado Rockies because of the ballpark that they play in. I think that, you know, you go there, everybody hits, right? But I think Colorado knows how to handle that atmosphere. And, you know, they're a Mile High. You know, just that, literally, the atmosphere. They're almost in the atmosphere for crying out loud at Coors Field. And, you know, just the way they know how to play in that ballpark. They know how to pitch in that ballpark. And I think that might be something that the Brewers' dominant bullpen might struggle with late in the innings.
Well, you know, Forrest, going to your point, that's what most people didn't know about this Rockies team. How underrated their pitching was because they, you know, play their home games in the Mile High City. They went down to Chicago and acted like nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just, it was amazing. It was just incredible. Yeah. I didn't realize how good of a pitching roster Colorado had until they were playing on a level playing ground where the ball didn't go 5 miles as soon as you hit it.
Well, and also we're talking about the pitching, but flip it around that game, John Lester, how good was he? He was that's the best in my recent memory, other than when he was with Boston. With him being with Chicago, that's one of the better games I've ever seen John Lester pitch in a Cubs uniform.
Oh, definitely.
Well, to give you guys a quick update, the Colorado Rockies have loaded the bases after Orlando Arcia booted a ball. Bases loaded, nobody out for none other than Mr. Nolan Arenado.
None other. Now let's go to the American League wild card game-ish. It wasn't much of a game, really. I mean, the Yankees didn't even get an out before they were on the board. Or I should say the A's, rather, didn't get an out before the Yankees were on the board in that game. And the A's went with an opener. We talked about it on our last show. Will Bob Melvin and the A's go with an opener? Well, they went with Liam Hendricks. He lasted an inning, and then Melvin went to the other dudes down in the bullpen, and it was just a runaway train from there.
Well, you know, Forrest, we were talking about it that day before the game. I said if they throw, they'd be better off throwing nine relievers. I said if they just start an inning one, have nine guys pitch one inning, they have a chance of winning this game. And I honestly thought that's what they were going to do. As soon as I saw a starter go out there, I said, uh-oh.
Well, it looks like the Colorado Rockies have just tied the game in Milwaukee. It is two apiece with one out after Nolan Arenado hits a sac fly. But going back to that Yankees-A's game, man, was that disappointing. The A's, who had one of the best bullpens in baseball, I know you're confident in the fact that your bullpen's one of the best and you want to throw all of them out there all at once, but it just doesn't work like that. Fernando Rodney is not meant for a sixth inning down 2-0. He's meant for an eighth inning up 2-0. You take relievers out of their situations that they're built for, and all of a sudden they stumble a little bit. And we see that a lot since we're Dodger fans. We see that plenty with Kenley with Kenley Jansen. Kenley Jansen is one of the worst relievers in non-save situations. Yeah. But you put him on the mound with a lead on the line, and he'll shut the door. That's what I didn't like about the bullpenning aspect of that game, is because it's such a high leverage situation that you want a starting pitcher out there to eat up some innings so you can bring in your situational guys when it is called for their situation.
Well, you know, Ethan, to argue your point, I disagree with you, because that situational pitcher that's meant for those two up situations, that's because they play their best when there's adrenaline, when they need to win the game. And when you're playing a wild card, loser goes home, winner moves on, the adrenaline's already high, you know, and they're supposed to just have that feeling of, I'm going to close this out. Even if they're down, they shouldn't even look at the scoreboard. So that goes to, you know, the relievers' faults that are looking at the scoreboard. It's a mental thing. It's pitching is such a mental game. You need to go out there and you just be like, look, I'm going to close this thing down like we're up by, you know, one run in the bottom of the ninth and I need to win the game for us. Not worrying about, oh, why am I in the game in the sixth inning? And I think that if they would have, maybe that's the manager's fault for not informing him, that's what I'm going to do. Like, you're going in sixth inning, no matter what, close it down for me. Maybe that's what I would do if I was, you know, a manager and had such a great bullpen. I don't know, but I don't think that you can give them a buyout, an excuse of, oh, they weren't ready for the situation, because the situation is high stakes no matter what. If you're up two runs, down two runs, if you're in a winner or loser goes home game, winner moves on, your adrenaline is flowing. It's high pressure. It doesn't matter what the score is.
That game's ready to get going over on MLB Network right now. Dodgers Braves starting in LA. Hyunjin Ryu against Mike Foltynewicz in game one. And quickly before this game starts, I feel like I know the feeling in the room with who's going to pick who for this series. But we'll start with you, Paul. Who are you going with in this Dodgers Braves series? Does the Dodgers experience matter enough to get them back to a World Series possibly, or on to the next round? And the Braves have a lot of youth, and maybe that lack of experience is good?
Well, I think I'm going to go with the Braves, guys.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I would not be leaving the studio today without a black eye if I said I was going with the Braves, boys.
Oh, you're an L.A. guy.
I'm definitely an L.A. guy, born and raised. I've been a Dodger fan not an avid fan, not a Forrest Hunt, but I definitely have been a Dodger fan, going to games as a little kid in Dodger Stadium. I have the memories. And I think, you know, to your point, I think the Dodgers aren't as good this year as they were last year. I don't even think it was close. Last year, I thought there was no way they weren't going to win the World Series. Just looking as not just
and the
as
momentum,
fan.
Too.
The momentum.
That team in September was ridiculous.
And in October, they only lost one game leading up to the World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and they had about 14 guys that are starting in starting lineups in any other, you know, MLB franchise, I thought, you know, and I just thought that team was too good not to lose it. So much depth, and I know there's a lot of scar tissue in the room about that.
Yeah,
so now this team with the experience, yes, they have the experience. Bellinger's batting well, which he didn't last year deep in the playoffs. So I think, you know, the Dodgers could do it. They need to go on a run. They have some confidence. So it'll be interesting to see. They have home field advantage in this first series.
I think the vote is obviously unanimous in this room for the boys in blue. But then my next question is the real question, I guess, then is what will be the hardest part about getting through Atlanta?
I think the hardest part about getting through Atlanta is those young bats. Their lineup is very deep, and that's going to be the hardest part. And their young starting pitchers are not bad, but after Mike Foltynewicz, there's a huge drop-off in that starting rotation. Another thing that hurts the baby Braves is their bullpen. Their bullpen's atrocious, and they have no closer. That's the problem with the Atlanta Braves. I mean, they might have a guy who has the label of closer, but is he truly a closer in all senses of the word? So I think I'll take the Dodgers in this series too. It may not be as quick as people think, but I think the Dodgers are going to come out with the W.
You think about it, you still have Ozzy Albies, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Inciarte on that team, Freddie Freeman, you know, you got Flowers. They have talent, and it's, when you look at it position by position, it's about split down the middle. And but like you said, the pitching staff as a whole is where Atlanta lacks in comparison to LA.
Yes.
I think that's one area that the Dodgers got better in, though, this year. It was like they lost that, you know, depth in the lineup. But I think the one thing they did improve on was relief pitching. I thought that was what cost them late in October last year. And they targeted exactly that. We're going to get better relief pitching. We're going to sacrifice a little bit on the bench and get some better relievers. And I think that was a good move.
Let's go to the American League wild card. We'll save the what I think is going to be the best for last. So let's go Cleveland Indians and the Houston Astros.
Oh, boy.
You look at Cleveland, they have one of the best starting pitchers in the American League and one of the best starting rotations in the American League. But it's the same on the other side with Houston, headlined by Justin Verlander. Keuchel's in that rotation. Both pitching rotations are absurd for both sides. And I think that, in my opinion, whichever starting rotation does better, meaning whether that's getting deeper into games, giving your team a lead when you come out of the game, I think that'll be the ball club that wins this series. And honestly, I think that's going to be Cleveland. 1-5, I like Cleveland's starters. Not that I don't like Houston. Nothing against Houston. Nothing at all against Houston. But when you look at Cleveland, I think just 1-5 in the rotation, and then both you can't look at the both. They're almost identical when you look at them on paper. If you looked at the stats on paper, there's no way you could tell me which club is which.
The only difference is the win totals. Houston tallied up over 100 wins. Cleveland barely scraping over 90 with 91. But I agree with you. This series is very even, except for in the skill positions.
Right.
That's where it lacks a little bit, is on the position player side. The Indians have Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, and I don't know anybody else.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But you could name
you could name
1-4 on the Houston Astros lineup, mm-hmm. and then even their bottom five are fantastic players.
So I think you really have to headline the starting rotations. If you got a guy that can go 3 times through the lineup and shut him down, that's going to be the team that wins this series.
Definitely. I mean, for me, it's got to go to Houston again, mm-hmm. For, you know, the reasons you guys are talking about. And then the obvious one is experience. I mean, they won the World Series last year.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it'd be sort of boring, but I think we could see, you know, a Houston-LA rematch.
Yeah.
My thing this year is how fun the American League playoffs are going to be to watch. There's just going to be a ton of hitting, a ton of great baseball. And, you know, Boston's on fire. Yankees looked good last night. You know, obviously Oakland looked bad, but
there's
a reason they looked bad. Yankees looked good. Houston looks good. Cleveland looks good. So it'll be interesting to see what develops in that American League you know, playoffs.
So let's get to the series that everybody in baseball and their mother has been waiting for. It's Yankees-Red Sox and the ALDS. Now, it couldn't be the ALCS, you know. I mean, that's what baseball, if they could pick, they'd rather have those two teams play in a seven-game series, not a five-game series. But these two teams, they fought it out in the American League East all year. You know, 1-2 in the AL East. Yankees got snubbed, got the wild card, if you call it that. I mean, but everybody's talking about the Red Sox. Oh, the Red Sox are this, the Red Sox are that. They've been the greatest team in the American League all year. You know, Mookie Betts is MVP. Well, what about J.D. Martinez? We have two MVPs on our team. Boston didn't want to play New York in this series.
And the reason why that is because you look at the recent track record, New York had dominated Boston down the stretch, especially in September. It wasn't even close. Boston got lucky to get out of a win, get out of New York with a win to clinch the division late in September. That's how scary this Yankees team is, that even Boston, who is considered the best team in baseball, is scared to play them in a five-game set. So I think I don't want to, but I think I'm going to take the Yankees in this series because their bullpen is deeper. Their starting rotation is not as strong, but I think it is pound for pound almost as good as the Red Sox. Of course, the Red Sox have far and away one of the best pitchers in baseball in Chris Sale, and he's going to headline the entire pitching matchups, that any pitching matchups that he's in. But after him, it's about the same with the Yankees. And in terms of lineup, the Yankees lineup is so much deeper. It is so much deeper, and it's so much more scary. So I think I'm going to
have... And you have possibly the AL Rookie of the Year.
In Gleyber Torres. So the New York Yankees, I have a feeling they're going to take that one in five. I think it's going to be a really good series.
I have to disagree with you on one thing. I think that it's going to be really tough for the Yankees to beat Chris Sale twice. You know, I agree with every other point. I think it's going to be a tight series. I think they're going to go five. I just think that if they get to the fifth game, they can't beat Chris Sale twice. I don't think they could beat him once in this series. And it's definitely not going to be in a game five. When you have one of the best pitchers in baseball you have to face in a game five, winner take all matchup, he's not going to, you know, not show up unless he's Yu Darvish. But
right.
I think that I think Chris Sale is going to take it home for the Red Sox.
I'm going with you, Paul. I'm going to take the Red Sox. And you bring up a point that they can't beat Chris Sale twice. And I think that the only shot they would have at beating Chris Sale twice is if they're playing in Yankee Stadium. That game five would be at Fenway. It won't be at Yankee Stadium. They're going to play three of the five games at Fenway. The Yankees, you look at it, I mean, the American League East, Ethan, you were talking about it the other day. We were just, I think we were in class, that, you know, if I were to go to one division, I'd go to the American League East because you can hit anywhere in the American League East. You got Fenway, Tampa, Baltimore, Yankees. You know, you have all these stadiums that I just want to go hit there. Let's just go take BP because I can hit it out of Yankee Stadium. And in Fenway, it's not much bigger, but you do have a 39-foot wall, and it, right center field's 420 feet away. And like you said, Paul, beating Chris Sale in a game five in Boston, the odds are heavily against the Yankees in that sort of game. So right now, yes.
I just wanted to say, to your point, they have to play Chris Sale twice in Boston. He's never going to pitch in New York in
right.
this series. He's playing pitching game one and game five if necessary. So, yeah.
Well, a little bit of updates for you guys. Milwaukee and Colorado looks like they'll be going to extra innings, tied 2-2, bottom of the ninth, two outs, and Lorenzo Cain in a 1-2 counting. It's Adam Ottavino, and I guess you could kind of call it breaking news. Ronald Acuna Jr. did not lead off with a home run to start his playoff career. So that's a bit of a win for the Dodgers.
It is. And then so we talked about the American League Division Series. We all had kind of different picks. So, Ethan, I'll start with you. Your team to win the American League. Who's going to the World Series in the American League?
The Houston Astros. They're just too good all the way around. And we saw it last year in the World Series. But the thing is, I think they got better from last year. That's the scary part. Their bullpen got better. Because last year in the World Series, that was the thing. The Dodgers get into the bullpen, they have a good chance of winning. But this year, their bullpen is locked down to go with five really good starting pitchers, and their lineup is the same as last year. So I think I'm going to go with the Houston Astros in the American League.
National League?
National League, I don't want to sound like a homer. It depends. all depends on who wins the Milwaukee and Colorado series. That's where the National League is lying, because I have a feeling the Dodgers might take care of business with Atlanta because of the experience. The baby Braves don't have as much because there's only 43 games of total talent on the Atlanta Braves in terms of playoff experience. Yasiel Puig by himself has played 46 playoff games. So I think the Dodgers will take that one. It's just, it all depends on who takes it because Milwaukee will be tough for the Dodgers to beat, but Colorado, you've seen them 19 times already in the season. Yeah. You know how to take care of business. Even when they were red hot, you took four in a row against the red hot Colorado Rockies.
And in a game 163, Walker Buehler went into the sixth inning with a no-hitter.
Exactly. So I think it all depends on who takes that NLDS between the Brewers and the Rockies.
American League for you, Paul?
American League for me, I think it'll be a seven-game series, Houston versus Boston, but I think Boston's going to take it just for the pure sake of home field advantage because I'm pretty sure, yeah, they get home field advantage. Yeah. So I just think that this is Boston's year to make the World Series. It'll be a really, really fun series to watch, and I think whoever wins that series will end up winning it all this year. But I think it'll be the Red Sox in seven.
National League.
National League. Here's my thing. If I'm the Dodgers, there's part of me that want to play the Rockies. There's part of me that doesn't. Because when you've beaten a team so many times, they start to figure out why they're losing to you in any sport. In football, it's where you see it the most. It's hard to beat a team twice in one season. So I think, you know, from Dodgers, being a Dodgers fan when I was little, seeing the Dodgers play last year, they've had a history of struggling in October of recent memory. So I think that I don't want to play the Rockies, but I think somehow they're going to pull it out. I think the Dodgers will end up winning in seven against whoever they play. You know, I don't know if I want it to be the Rockies. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Well, then for myself, I'm going Boston. Boston for the American League. I think Boston takes care of New York. Or Boston takes care of Cleveland because my first pick was Cleveland to beat the Houston Astros. That's a bold pick, I'll tell you that. But if Cleveland does pull it out against Houston, that Boston has no problem taking care of the Cleveland Indians. So Boston for me in the American League side. And, you know, I'm torn like you guys are. But you guys are talking about how tough it's going to be for Milwaukee. And I originally picked the Rockies to beat Milwaukee. So if the Rockies do pull that out and they beat Milwaukee, and then it seems like it's going to be – it seems as if it might be a little easy for the Dodgers to move on. I think the Dodgers have a good shot against the Rockies. I think we see Dodgers-Red Sox World Series. And
that'll be the first time it's ever happened in baseball history.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the most historic franchises in the sport, and that would be the first time they ever face each other in the World Series.
Yep. So right now, 0-0 Dodgers-Braves, top of the first. And they're in extras, I assume?
They are going to the top of the 10th in Milwaukee.
Going to the top of the 10th. That's it for our Major League Baseball segment. We have a few more minutes here on Hot in the Igloo live at Penguin Radio. From 5 to 6 every Thursday, we're going to take a look at college football. Well, we had some picks in college football last week. The only person that went 2-0 and there was picks for the two games that we picked was associate head basketball coach Scott Waterman, who was our guest last week. He picked Notre Dame over Stanford and Ohio State over Penn State. Both of those games went in favor of Coach Waterman, and Ethan and myself picked Penn State. Well, yes. I went 1-1 in that. Paul was 1-1 in his picks.
I went 0-2.
Yeah, Ethan eats his words for the second straight week.
Unfortunately for those. Igloo. Unfortunately for those handicappers out there, Coach Waterman's not with us today, so he can't be taking his picks.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you look at that Notre Dame-Stanford game, and it didn't happen the way that many people thought it would happen.
No.
Stanford, 61 yards in the second half. They ran 9 plays. That would just... ran them out of the building.
It was such a painful game to watch because the Stanford defense.
It was a great game to watch.
The Stanford defense, which is usually so disciplined, Book made them look silly. He made them look silly in all phases of the game. And you saw what Stanford was able to do in coming back against Oregon, but that Notre Dame defense is completely different than that Oregon defense. And Notre Dame, with smart coaching on their side, didn't make any questionable calls, like running the ball with a minute left and forcing. Either way, yeah. Stanford didn't get lucky in this game, and Notre Dame just flat out beat them.
Well, and then when you look at top five pass rushing units, units, like pass rushing defenses in college football. It's Clemson is the fifth best, and Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Alabama two, and that Notre Dame defensive front is number one. How long that lasts, we don't know. But they showed that last week against Stanford. Then you go on the other side. You have a number four against number nine, Ohio State, in Happy Valley at Penn State. Ethan and I took Penn State. Paul, you and Coach Waterman took Ohio State. You said 38-7. That definitely wasn't the final score. but, you know, you have to talk about the play call at the end of the game. Ohio State was trailing Penn State on a 4th-and-5. Ran a read option play. It was almost like it was an RPO, run pass option. It looked more like a draw to the running back, and you have Trace McSorley, who is obviously your top passer on the day, and he was your top rusher on the day, and you don't put it in his hands to put the game away. You get that first down, game's over. Instead, Ohio State comes back. You get a first down, and you're in field goal range, and you have a chance to kick the field goal. Ohio State up by one. I don't understand how you don't put it in the hands of Trace McSorley in that situation. 4th-and-5, let him look for a pass, and if not, get it with his legs.
I think that in the pressure of the moment, they made a gutsy move, gutsy decision. I think that everybody thought it was going to be in his hands, the quarterback's hands, and they kind of wanted to mix it up, go with a little trickery, and that's just the way it went.
It just didn't work. But when you're Trace McSorley and you're a quarterback of that prestige, when Ohio State puts 9 guys in the box, you don't audible out of that play?
We got an update. Okay, Ronald Acuna Jr., who set the record for the most leadoff home runs by a rookie in the season. Well, Jock Peterson just lit off with a home run. It is 1-0 Dodgers. He had 7 leadoff home runs this season. Hey, I'll take another one.
He set a record for Dodger in Dodger history.
Most leadoff home runs by a Dodger. Yeah. Now it's 1-0 Dodgers.
So we're back on baseball, switching gears very quickly. if you're a quarterback at a Division I program and your program is ranked number 9th in the nation, and you see that, you know what play is going to be called, you know it's going to be a handoff to your running back, and Ohio State puts 8 guys in the box and you don't audible out of it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he kind of just cracked under pressure in the situation, man. Maybe that's why the coach knows he's not a gamer. I don't know. You know, sometimes you crack under pressure, and if you know a guy's going to crack, you don't want the ball to be in his hands. The last thing you need is an interception or a turnover. I mean, I guess 4th down didn't really matter, but obviously they didn't have enough confidence in him to give him the ball.
Penn State's going to be one of the better one-loss teams at the end of the year anyway.
And James Franklin is a great coach. He's a really good coach. He's one of the best coaches in college football. Yeah. And all coaches make mistakes, and that was a very highly questionable call. You're playing against an in-conference rival. Well, they were playing at Penn State, right?
Yep, Happy
Valley.
They were
playing at home. It was just so unfortunate.
Looking ahead to this week, you have the Red River Showdowns this weekend, number 19 Texas at number 7 Oklahoma. And that's going to be a good game. Texas is ranked 19, but they're not as good as this Oklahoma team, who has an A's draft pick, and Kyler Murray is the quarterback at Oklahoma following Baker Mayfield. How do you follow Baker Mayfield? Well, how about being one of the top three right now in the Heisman running? I mean, Murray's been so good. He threw, 7 touchdown passes last week after not playing the first series because he was late to practice. I don't think that this is going to be a contest for Oklahoma tomorrow.
No, I don't think so either. Oklahoma's just too good. They're too fast for everybody else. So I think Oklahoma takes this one easy.
I don't know, man. I'd have to disagree. I think Jim Herman's a smart coach. And he watched, I think it was Army a couple weeks ago, give Oklahoma fits.
Yeah.
And I think that he's going to make adjustments. They have something rolling right now in Texas. They're 4-1 on the year. I think they lost, was it their first game of the year?
First game to Maryland for the 3rd straight year.
Yeah, so they lost their first game of the year to Maryland. Since then, it's like they woke up, they said, let's get down to business, and they've gone 4-0 since then. I think when a team's hot and another team is 5-0 on the record sheet, but it seems like they were trying to figure some stuff out a couple weeks ago against Army. So I don't know. I think I'm going to call it upset here. I'm going to call a last-minute field goal block. Return touchdown. Okay. Last minute field goal block with Oklahoma trailing late in the fourth quarter. I think Texas is going to block a field goal and win by 2 or 3.
I like it. How about number 4 Clemson at Wake Forest? Wake Forest, one of the faster paced teams in the country. They run about 100 plays a game. Number 4 Clemson, they were bumped down last week. Trevor Lawrence, their freshman starting quarterback that took over the starter, and we know about that story, right? Kelly Bryant transferring, got the paperwork, he's out. Too bad for Kelly Bryant. He didn't have a chance to shine last week when the freshman quarterback was taken out with a concussion in the second quarter. You know, Clemson would have came back. They're playing Syracuse. They're down 6 points at that point. Kelly Bryant would have let him back easily. But is this a trap game for number four Clemson with the freshman starter on the road at Wake Forest against a team that runs that it's really, they're really fast paced? Could this be a trap game for Clemson, the first true road game for the freshman?
I think it might be a slow start to the game, but I think Clemson will end up, you know, pulling it out on top. They seem to be a team that likes to perform late, even with their third string quarterback in this week. They seem to show up in the fourth quarter. So I think I like Clemson to win the game. I like Wake Forest maybe to have an early lead. Good first half. But I have a couple friends on Wake Forest. One, Alex Bachman, the one that was on ESPN with the Star.
Yeah.
Reception. I went to high school with him. He's good friends with myself and Ryan Hippler, our men's basketball transfer student, fresh blood in the men's basketball program here at Dominican. So, anyways, I think Bachman might have a I'd like to see him have a good game, but I don't think Wake Forest can upset this Clemson team.
Hey, Paul, guess what? We actually agreed on something on this show. It's a miracle. I am going to agree with you. I think Clemson is going to start off a little bit slow, but in the end, I think they're going to pull out the victory.
Then we have number 5, LSU at number 22, Florida. This is an interesting one. Steve Spurrier, if you don't know, Steve Spurrier was the head coach at Florida from 1990 to 2001, most recently in Division I at South Carolina. And then Les Miles, the LSU head coach from 05 to 2016. This was in a tweet. Spurrier told Les Miles that if LSU wins, he'll eat grass. And so Les Miles said, how much you want to bet your Gators are going down this weekend? He tweeted that at Steve Spurrier. Steve Spurrier replied with, shoot, we're going to win on Saturday, and if we don't, I'll eat some of that grass of yours. And when we do win, you're wearing my visor. Of course, Steve Spurrier, iconic visor he wears every week. This is at the Swamp. They're playing at Florida. This is a pretty good LSU team, obviously ranked 5th in the country, but at Florida, Florida's pushing all the right buttons right now. Yeah, I don't know, man. I might take the Gators this week.
I think I'm going to go with LSU for one fact and one fact only. They've already had a couple of magical moments this season.
You're right.
So out of all that, they've already been under the pressure. They've been in very tight situations. And that game-winning field goal against Auburn was on the road, correct?
Yes.
They've already been on the road in a tough environment against an SEC opponent and pulled out a very tight victory. So I think Mr. Steve Spurrier is going to be eating some grass.
I think it's the second time we're going to agree. Two times in a row. Good thing we agree on college football.
Yeah.
LSU Tigers are winning this game, and here's why. Coach O. And Oregon, baby.
Coach O.
And I think Coach O deserves it. I think he deserves a playoff team. I think he deserves a deep run. He's been lowballed so many times, most recently by USC, when he led that team as an interim coach, and they got rid of him, got some replacement, and then ended up hiring Clay Helton, who wasn't anybody anyway. I think Ed Oregon is, in my opinion, deserving of a great team, and I think he's got one. I think he's got a little miracle in him in LSU.
Got one more ranked matchup. Number 6 Notre Dame on the road in Blacksburg at 22 Virginia Tech. You know where my vote lies. I'll let you two discuss this one before we head off the air.
Notre Dame was just extremely, extremely impressive against Stanford. So I'm pretty sure they're going to take this win in a very tough road environment against Virginia Tech.
I think Notre Dame's going to run them over. Another 48-7 call here.
48-7. I hope we don't win by one, Paul, because that's what you said last week. I really hope it's not 27-26.
I called the winner, didn't I?
You're right. Win's good for me. Well, once again, we're running out of time. You're hot in the igloo. Running out of time. Too much to talk about. Not enough time. Thank you guys for being great today. As always, make sure you tune into Penguin Radio tomorrow, 12-2, men's soccer, and then Sunday, 12-2:30 once again, men's and women's soccer. And for Ken Goldstone, Paul Gunnis, Ethan Ostrada, and Forsan Sang Song, everybody, we'll see you next week for more Hot in the Igloo, live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio. Rack City Chick, Rack City Chick.